Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Nabil Biagio, working from home on this pre-recorded program via remote from Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Friday, April 9th, 2021. Eye specialists operate on hundreds of blind South Sudanese in the Jonglei state capital, Bor.
I am so happy to have been able to see you again. Even now, I am looking at your teeth. I have heard that this condition can be treated, but it is expensive.
And Ugandan truck drivers demand security along the main road linking South Sudan to Uganda.
You see, these guys have been hijacking people. Not only hijacking people, but killing drivers. It has given us a very hard time.
We will have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A U.S.-based nonprofit known as Partners in Compassionate Care is conducting eye operations in the Jonglei state capital, Bor, to treat South Sudanese with eye problems. The group hired South Sudanese doctors to perform surgeries on hundreds of patients in Bor this week. For VOA News, Dengai Deng reports from Bor.
70-year-old Thonyayuel says she lost her vision about 5 years ago. She says she is thrilled to have her sight back after doctors removed cataracts from her eyes.
I am so happy to have been able to see you again. Even now, I am looking at your teeth. I have heard that this condition can be treated, but it is expensive. That is why I say God brought back our son from US to come and help us. There is nothing more I can say. I'm so excited.
Ayuel strongly encourages other South Sudanese with eye problems to take advantage of their free services to regain their sight and follow the doctor's orders after undergoing the surgery.
I have heard that some people, after having been operated, lose their sight again after a few days because they didn't do what the doctor say. The doctor is clear. He told me not to carry anything heavy. No alcohol or smoking has a smoke could interfere with my vision. These are the simple guidelines to follow.
80-year-old Garang Ajongpach says he will remain grateful for the treatment he received from doctors who restored his sight.
Everything is in God's hand, my son. I didn't know that I would be able to get a doctor to treat my eye condition because it's expensive to get. It's been a difficult situation not seeing all, but this morning after yesterday's operation, I can see a little bit, and the doctor told me it will get better slowly. So I am happy to see again.
Dr. Santino Malang, who was hired by Partners in Compassionate Care to perform the operations in Bor, says he has treated 17 patients and hopes to work on more than 400 others before the campaign in Jonglei State ends.
We have operated 16 yesterday, and we have a list of about 19 today. We are going to start right away. Among the people that we have done already, we did the surgery yesterday. Right now, there are some people who are seeing very well. They went home. Those who were full yesterday, some of them are walking alone today.
Dr. Malang says his facility, which opened 3 days ago, is the only eye clinic with a surgical capability operating in Greater Upper Nile. He says many people in Bor have cataracts or trachoma. Deng Ajang Jongkuch, Executive Director of Partners in Compassionate Care, says the eye operation in Jonglei State will continue through April 18th. He says many people across the state suffer blindness that can be treated.
We went to Malek Leprosy. When we went there, there's a group of people with leopards, and there was one woman who was blind. So I took two American doctors over there, and this woman, we were with Mary Alwell Nong that was with us. So when we introduced Mary Alwell Nong, this blind woman started crying, say, God, why don't you open my eye so that I can see Mary Alwell Nong Garang. So and one of American doctors walk and go and check her, went and check her eyes, and the doctor said, this woman is not blind, she has a cataract. That was my first time to actually be aware about the issue of cataract in South Sudan. So she, the doctor say, if we have an eye surgeon, this can be easily removed and she can see. So me and Dave Bowman, the founder of Pound of Partners in Compassionate Care, we make it as a mission to bring eye care to Jonglei Estates and South Sudan.
John Kuju lives with his family in the Midwestern state of Michigan, says he is thankful to Americans who funded this year's ICAM operation in Bor to help blind South Sudanese regain their sight. He says his nonprofit has spent about $25,000 to perform the operations in Bor. John Kuju says he will return to the U.S. to solicit more funds from donors for more ICAM services in South Sudan. The nonprofit was formed in 2004 by David Bowman, who believes in providing humanitarian health care to South Sudanese. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaideng, reporting from Bor.
Hundreds of commercial truckers carrying goods from South Sudan have stopped at the border this week, with drivers refusing to complete deliveries due to insecurity. A series of armed attacks on vehicles in South Sudan last month left at least 15 people dead. The truckers say they won't leave Uganda and Kenya until their safety can be guaranteed. Winnie Trino reports from South Sudan's capital, Juba.
David Kirotho Mathinde, chairman of the Kenyan Drivers Association, said attacks on roads linking Juba to the towns of Nimule and Yei have claimed lives of several foreign truck drivers in recent months. He said no truck will leave for South Sudan if the government does not provide security along the roads.
You see, these guys have been hijacking people. Not only hijacking people, but killing drivers. It has given us a very hard time. We are not happy. If the government of Sudan is not going to take any action about those people who are killing our drivers, then definitely... even our bosses, we are going to discuss this issue with the government, with our government, and make sure that no person will enter that country. Not even a driver will never enter that country, because we do work with respect, and that's why we are working. Even we go into dangerous zones.
Mathinde said drivers often put their lives on the line to deliver food to countries like South Sudan and Congo, which struggle with food insecurity, and that it's not fair that they are being targeted. He said the association has asked South Sudan's government several times to boost security, but nothing much has ever been done. All the drivers want, he said, is protection.
Let them make sure that we have full support of security from border to the end of the last destination of dropping their goods. Let them make sure that we have the last solution and forever. No driver should be killed. No goods should be stolen.
Colonel Santo Domich, deputy spokesperson for South Sudan People's Defense Forces, said the chief of staff has implemented plans to provide security on the major roads leading to Juba.
It was resolved in the SSPDF strategic security meeting that the forces along the road from Juba to Nimuli, as well as from Juba to Yei Kaya, have to be reinforced, and they have already been reinforced since last Friday. And the forces are there. We are going to locate a lot of detaches along those roads. And of course, it is impossible to close all the roads from with the military, but we are going to close all those gaps either by foot patrol or mechanized patrol.
Domit said the army will make sure that the roads are safe for the movement of all commercial trucks and for humanitarian operations. Daniel Ding, an official in charge of border agents in the town of Nimule, say there are about 3,000 trucks currently parked on the Uganda side of the border. He said if the standoff continues, prices of fuel and food in South Sudan may start to rise because the landlocked country is dependent on goods transported through its neighbors. Winnie Sirino for VOA News, Juba, South Sudan.
According to a recent report just published by Freedom House, a Washington, D.C. think tank dedicated to promoting democracy and human rights, democratic norms are under increasing threat globally. To find out more about this trend and what it means, especially in Africa, VOA's Adam Phillips spoke with John Temin, Director of Africa Programs at Freedom House. Mr. Temin began the conversation by stating that his organization has reported a general decline in democratic freedoms around the world every year for the last 15 years.
And that pattern is reflected in Africa. The last year that we looked at, 2020, was one of the worst years, unfortunately, in terms of regressions on democracy and freedoms in Africa.
What kinds of democratic norms are you looking for?
We're looking at political rights and civil liberties and the environment in which elections take place. We're looking at freedom of movement, freedom of expression, freedom of religion, media freedoms, and increasingly at online freedoms. So the overall freedoms that citizens enjoy in any particular country.
I note that West Africa is of particular concern.
Yeah, we've definitely seen a significant democratic decline in West Africa in recent years. And that comes after a period where West Africa did relatively well. This past year, we saw a significant decline in Cote d'Ivoire related to elections and changing term limits. Also on term limits, we saw a decline in Guinea, where the president engineered a third term. Over a number of years, we've seen a notable decline in Burkina Faso. Last year, we saw a significant decline in Mali related to the coup there. Benin had a substantial decline last year, and Benin used to be a country that really performed very well in terms of democracy. And those declines are not limited only to West Africa. We've seen notable declines in Tanzania, in Mozambique, and elsewhere.
In fairness, there have been some positive signs for democracy in Africa as well.
And it's important not to lose sight of that. Sudan has shown some real improvements over the last couple of years. Malawi had a really important improvement this past year. Mauritania has shown some quiet but important improvements as well. So there are some bright spots.
Are there any new factors that tie some of these various forms of decline together?
There are some common factors that we see. One recently is the response to COVID. We see some leaders using the pretext of COVID to clamp down more broadly, limiting political gatherings, limiting political party activities that are disproportionately applied to opposition parties. I would cite examples in Zimbabwe as one and Uganda in another, but there are additional examples as well.
What are some other emerging challenges?
We see countries that are increasingly being repressive in the digital space and learning how to use digital tools to observe some of their opponents and also to limit free expression online. And that's happened in a number of countries. Ethiopia has shut down the internet. Zambia has problematic online legislation. A number of other countries have tried to use legislative tools to limit that space. And that issue is not going away anytime soon.
What can African citizens do to push back and make their governments more responsive and accountable?
The first thing to say is that citizens are already doing a lot, and we've seen a lot of resistance and much of it effective in recent years. You look at the revolution in Sudan, you look at some of the protests in Malawi that led to a positive change there, and you even look more recently at some of the protests in Senegal, in Nigeria. Citizens have become more savvy about how to use peaceful protests and how to really challenge governments that are not serving their interests. Of course, there are great risks associated with that, especially in Sudan. Many people have died trying to peacefully stand up to the previous regime.
What else can be done to bring nations back into the democratic fold or keep them there? What are you working on?
What I work a lot on in particular is more of the civil society piece and the media piece and the international engagement and the policy piece from abroad. I think it's all a combination of those factors, you know, citizens on the streets, plus more the civil society engagement plus international pressure that we often look for.
That's John Temin, Director of Africa Programs at Freedom House here in Washington. He spoke with my colleague Adam Phillips. You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, progress on COVID-19 vaccinations across the globe. That story is lined up right after this break.
Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. America, Australia, and the Philippines limited the use of AstraZeneca's COVID-19 vaccine on Thursday, while the African Union dropped plans to buy the shots, dealing further blows to the company's hopes to deliver a vaccine to the world. Reuters' Emma McCarthy reports.
The shot, which is developed with Oxford University and considered a frontrunner in the global vaccine race, has been plagued by safety concerns and supply problems since phase 3 trial results were published in December, with Indonesia the latest country forced to seek doses from other developers. The Philippines suspended the use of AstraZeneca shots for people below 60 after Europe's regulator said on Wednesday it found rare cases of blood clots among some adult recipients, although the vaccine's advantages still outweighed its risks. Australia recommended those under 50 get Pfizer's candidate in preference to AstraZeneca's, a policy shift that it warned would hold up its inoculation campaign. The African Union says it is now exploring options with Johnson & Johnson, having dropped plans to buy AstraZeneca's vaccine from India's Serum Institute. AstraZeneca's vaccine is by far the cheapest and most high-volume launched so far, and has none of the extreme refrigeration requirements of some other COVID-19 vaccines, making it likely to be the mainstay of many vaccination programs in the developing world. But more than a dozen countries have at one time suspended or partially suspended use of the shot, first on concerns about efficacy in older people, and now on worries about rare side effects in younger people. That, coupled with production setbacks, will delay the rollout of vaccines across the globe as governments scramble to find alternatives.
The World Health Organization says Africa's rollout of COVID-19 vaccine is being hampered by supply shortages and delays in planned deliveries. To date, the WHO reports 4.3 million cases of COVID-19 in Africa, including 114,000 deaths. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
A few countries are bucking the trend and making good progress in immunizing their populations against the deadly coronavirus. The World Health Organization says Morocco has purchased 8.7 million doses of vaccine and has administered more shots to its population than any other African country. It adds a few other countries, notably Ghana, Rwanda, and Angola, also have distributed a significant proportion of their vaccine within a short time. However, WHO Regional Director for Africa, Matshidiso Moeti, says more than 1 billion Africans still have not been able to avail themselves of the life-saving tool. She says Africa has administered only 2% of the more than 600 million doses of COVID-19 vaccine that has been dispensed globally.
10 African countries that have carried out the most vaccinations have now used up over 2/3 of the supplies that they've received. At the same time, countries such as Benin, Comoros, Liberia, Sierra Leone, and South Sudan have faced delays in rolling out vaccines due to constraints around funding, planning, and human resource shortages.
In another setback, Moeti says delays in COVAX shipments are expected to continue this month because India is fighting a severe second wave of COVID-19. As a consequence, she says India, which is a major manufacturer of the AstraZeneca vaccine, has temporarily banned exports. The European Medicines Agency Wednesday announced a possible link between the AstraZeneca vaccine and unusual blood clots with low platelets. Despite that, Moeti says she would welcome delivery of that vaccine as soon as it is available.
While concerning, the events under assessment are very rare, we'd like to emphasize. Almost 200 million individuals have received this vaccine around the world, and cases of blood clots and low platelets are extremely low, with less than 100 events reviewed in Europe.
Of greater concern, she says, is the unequal distribution of life-saving vaccine, which is largely available in wealthy countries and scarce in poor countries. To help right that wrong, Moeti says high-income countries should share their surplus supplies of vaccine with other less fortunate countries. By doing that, she acknowledges all countries will be sharing the risks. At the same time, she says they will minimize the emergence of further variants of the coronavirus and show solidarity in defeating the devastating disease. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
That's our show for this Friday. Let us know what you think about the show. We receive comments from you during the week. I read some of them earlier. James Ray Majok in Bentleytown, who writes, "The attack that was being carried out at Apuok Gir, Lao, Kongo youth at the Gadeng cattle camp is something beyond description. I'm appealing to the Unity State Governor and the Warap State Governor to cooperate and find a way to bring those culprits to book accordingly." A person who identifies himself only as Daniel from Yei, South Sudan writes, "Thanks for the South Sudan in Focus program. I would like to encourage all South Sudanese to have hope for peace. God knows how and when to provide answer to the suffering of South Sudanese people. When that time comes, all South Sudanese will enjoy lasting peace and there will be prosperity for all. This is our optimism and it will indeed happen." Anyidi Gospel in Kampala, Uganda says, "I just want to thank you because I really love the way you tell the stories. I pity our citizens who are denied to seek treatment by the medical workers just because they got involved in a motor accident. That the person should present the police documents first, but it's not fair for our citizens. Accidents have no formula. They just happen suddenly, so they should save lives first." Philip Buddha Ladu, who says he is a practicing journalist in Juba, writes, "It's my pleasure to connect up with the wonderful VOA family. Keep up the great job of always bringing out both sides of the stories you cover, especially about South Sudan and beyond the borders. It's challenging to balance stories here in South Sudan, especially for the local media, most especially something connected to the opposition, but you have the upper hand to do such." Richard from the Rhino Camp refugee settlement in northern Uganda writes, "Thanks for making us updated on how our nation and continent is going. To those other refugees who have returned to South Sudan to resettle, are they given repatriation by UNHCR? Let them not listen to political nonsense from leaders in South Sudan because they will be killed by the same government. Let them listen to the situation in Yei. Last time, the people who are registered refugees were engaged by government politics that people should come home. They were killed or abused every day by the government." Mate Martin Lawrence from Wau, South Sudan says, "I don't blame JETCO. The government is to blame for not building Fula Falls Dam. It's a misplaced priority. We have even been living in darkness since the time we were born. Let it close down completely so that our government will think of doing something good for its people." Moses Lemi from Entebbe, Uganda writes, "The returnees from Eastern Equatoria State are right to ask for compensation from the government because it's the government soldiers that destroyed their property." Isaac Itang from Bentleytown writes, "I and my fellow South Sudanese have completely run short of any escape mechanism to try to cope with this crisis due to the fact that the 2018 peace deal seems not to solve this suffering. Food items have skyrocketed and the crime rate increased at an unprecedented level. This week alone, more than 50 people died in Unity, Warab, and Lakes states. Our leaders must listen to the UN envoy and representatives' advice to speed up the implementation process, most of which need no funding at all." Peter Goj Anyang Majongdul in Jebel Boma County writes, "Many thanks to Honorable Minister of Health Achwe Yol by being the first person to take the first dose of AstraZeneca vaccine in the country. You set the example of a true leader. Long live the minister." Along those same lines, Thok Chuni Yok Kwai from Juba, South Sudan says, "Bravo, bravo to First Vice President Riek Machar and the Minister of Health for what they have shown to the people of South Sudan. We want the rest of the government officials to do the same." Nial Chod Diang in Juba's Protection of Civilians Site 3 writes, South Sudanese still are dying through intercommunal fighting, ambushes in and around the country and its borders. All of these are because of failure of the government to implement the agreement fully, like security agreement, state legislatures, and national legislature. Another thing is the failure of the international community to give pressure on the warring parties to fully implement the peace according to agreement. Let us wake up, dislodge the tribal hatred being planted in us by those bourgeois whose egos made them to kill us. Unite for a better South Sudan. Mabor Alad Rengo from Rombek Lake States writes, "This week has not been good to all South Sudanese. There has been a series of road ambushes which has brought panic to all road travelers. Also, South Sudan has lost the historical former Archbishop of the Diocese of Juba, His Grace Paulina Lukudu Emeritus. This is a great loss to the church family as well as South Sudan at large. May his soul rest in eternal peace." Someone who identifies himself only as John from the Rhino camp in Uganda says, "We request the government of South Sudan to respect human rights and allow liberty to the South Sudan nation. Thanks and God bless." Gatiek Wichar in Cairo, Egypt writes, "Hi Nabil Biagio and John Tanza. I would like to thank you for keeping us updated at all times. I appreciate South Sudanese youth who came from Juba and those who are residing here in Cairo for attending the first South Sudan National Youth Conference in Cairo. The conference was very informative and it marked the beginning of the friendship and sustainable cooperation between youth of South Sudan and Egypt." Martin Manuel Wugol, a South Sudanese living in Uganda, says, "Kindly extend my deepest heartfelt condolences to the Catholic Church family in Africa for the untimely deaths of three archbishops, namely Archbishop Emeritus of Kampala Diocese, Dr. Cyprian Luanga, retired Archbishop Emeritus of Juba Diocese, His Grace Lukudu Loro, and Archbishop Emeritus of Cameroon, who passed on unexpectedly early this month together with other two late archbishops who died during Easter period of Jesus Christ's resurrection. May their souls rest in perfect peace." Samuel Rameau in Yei writes, "I was worried because among 79 counties in South Sudan, none of our quota for COVID-19 vaccines has reached us in Yei. I was at Yei Civil Hospital for 3 days waiting to be vaccinated, all in vain. Where is the quota for Yei?" And finally, Jacob Dior Machweng from Rombek Lakes State writes, "I was surprised when the COVID-19 vaccine arrived in the country 2 weeks ago and none of the top leaders took the first jab until the Minister of Health, Honorable Elizabeth Achway, had the courage and led the country into the vaccination. It showed me that what men can do, women can do better in this country." The views expressed here do not reflect the position of VOA on developments in South Sudan. Thanks for your comments and keep them coming. I am Nabil Biagio in Washington. Thanks for being part of our evening. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, wear a mask when in public places, and do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there is no cure for coronavirus. Join us again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Yeah.